This is a top 1% trick. What I'm telling you is, out of over 100 presenters, less than one of them is using this and using it well. So you can start, you could, if you learn this tip from this podcast right now, you can ascend to the top of virtual speakers. Like,
yeah.
Like the second part is, then if you design for engagement, you can leave the Zoom in gallery. So what I've done before is that I present for like 10 minutes and then I stop presenting and I go to gallery and talk to the group. And then when I go to present again, I get a second slide deck, right? And then start presenting.
Welcome to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast helping DIY marketers attract raving fans and repeat buyers. I'm Candace Rudardi, your accountability coach. And today I'm joined by virtual meeting expert, John Chen. He's the author of the number one Amazon hot new book release, Engaging Virtual Meetings. He's been meeting virtually for over 35 years. He has produced over 4,000 virtual meetings, including an 8-language meeting and the only 100% live virtual conference in the training industry. Let's welcome our guest, John Chen.
I bring my own walk-on music, Candace. You know,
already we have an engaging meeting. Okay, how did you? Okay, I want you to tell your unique story first, but then I want you to tell me how you did that, because we're just going to give you tip after tip after tip after tip today on how to make your virtual meetings more engaging. So, how did you do that? No, don't answer the don't answer that yet.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Are you tired of struggling with follow-up? Do you want to stand out from the crowd but find it difficult to do so in a convenient and easy way? Look no further than Send Out Cards. With Send Out Cards, you can easily stay in touch with those who matter most, celebrate important events, and stay top of mind with just a few clicks on your computer or taps on your phone. In today's world of overflowing inboxes and empty mailboxes, Send Out Cards provides a personal touch that people truly appreciate. Don't get lost in the sea of technology. Go old school with Send Out Cards. Check out the link in the show notes to send your first card free on me or visit momgeek.com/cards. Tell us your unique story. How did you get to where you are today?
Okay, well, here's the great one. All right. I'm the author of a book called Engaging Virtual Meetings, but how did I get here? She asked. Well, here's some of the ways that I got here. I used to do team building. Do you know what geocaching is?
Yeah, I do.
Right. High-tech scavenger hunt using GPS receivers. I used it to teach team and leadership skills all around the world. That's awesome until this thing happened. Right. This thing, if you can't see it, of course, is the coronavirus. Right. This little thing came in and screwed everybody up. And this is what my March of 2020 looked like. It looked like 15 canceled programs. So my strategy to look at the past is to lean on, or my strategy when faced with uncertainty is to lean on the past. And so in my past is this thing. All right. This is Prodigy. For those who don't remember, this is one of the first graphical based meeting spaces online. That was 35 years ago. So I've been meeting online for a really long time. In fact, in 2011, I wrote a book called 50 Digital Team Building Games. And so for decades, I've been trying to tell people, we could actually do this. You could do meaningful work, save the travel and expenses, have dinner with your family, friends at the end of the day. And people said, but that's great, John, but here's a bunch of money and you need to fly to Orlando, right? So I'm sitting in my office with nothing to do in March of 2020. I don't make vaccines, but I do know how to make your virtual meeting better. So I put a course on Eventbrite and I gave it away for free. That's just my intuition said, why don't I just do something to help the world at a time when it was so challenging? And it turned out that 5,000 people actually took the class in 2020. Yeah, hashtag jaw drop. So much so that my publisher called me
back. I'm shocked. Okay, so your publisher calls you. Sorry, I interrupted you because I was so shocked.
I'll wait for the shock. Okay, the shock's over. Okay, so my publisher calls me and he goes, hey, do you want to write your second book? And I said, sure. And so I go to write the second book, but this is what I feel like the cruelest joke my publisher ever played on me. They said, hey, John, we don't know how long this coronavirus thing is going to last. So will you please rush the book? Right? Side note, despite the White House declaring the pandemic over, right, my brother and sister just tested positive last week. So number one, coronavirus still happening. And number two is that I wrote the book in 9 weeks. In 9 weeks. That's right. I wrote the entire manuscript in 9 weeks, and it came out in October of 2020. Hit the number one hit the number one Amazon hot new release. And geez, now what do I do? So I spend the majority of my time now helping other people design, produce, and speak at virtual and MC virtual meetings. Right. So Candace, obviously, I think, Candace, you do a little speaking on virtual meetings, correct?
I do.
Okay, so I'm gonna give
weekly.
You my number.
daily. Okay, yesterday I was literally on Zoom from 7 o'clock in the morning until 5 o'clock. I had bio breaks in between some of the meetings, but it was 7 to 5. I was exhausted.
That's 14 hours,
right? It feels like it, doesn't it?
Well, see, and I asked that question, right? If you're actually listening to this, think in your head, what's the maximum number of hours you've ever spent on a video meeting in a single day? And my answer is 25 hours.
Holy crap.
I had somebody ask me to produce her birthday party, and it was around the world because she had friends international. And while we planned for 24 hours, we just wanted to see how long we could go to try and break Zoom. We got to 25 and a half before we called it.
Holy moly. I can't even imagine. Can't even imagine.
That
sounds like fun. Around the world birthday party.
Yeah. Well, sleep deprivation is a cool drug. Okay. So let me give you my number one tip for virtual speakers. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay. Here we go. For those who can't see, I'm walking backwards until I'm standing up in my complete virtual screen. And then the tip, I just changed screens. I'm on a stage and it says, stand up. Right?
Candace. Okay, I feel really bad right now because normally I am standing during a podcast.
Oh yeah, but when you speak to other people in the group, if you want to gain a huge advantage, find a way to stand up, which is like put boxes or get a lifter desk or just get the camera to eye level. Mm-hmm. And you'll be in the top 20% of all speakers. Because if you even look on the last screen, four really famous people in the world presented sitting down, and you get this mm-hmm. physiological advantage for standing up. So now, of course, you're on Candace's podcast. And so if you do have video, you'll see the last two things I spent my last 3 years, which is I built a green screen big enough to walk in. So that's really how I'm doing this, right? You asked me how I'm doing all these things. And then, you know, this is the best one here too. This is what's actually in front of me right now, which is I have 12 screens to my disposal to do whatever I want. And that's how I produce. Yeah. And you can actually see Candace up here, right? Spotlighted on my monitor on the top. And yeah, so that's how I do all these things.
That's awesome. So, okay. So for folks who can't take it to that level.
Yeah. And they shouldn't. There's very few people who should or can't.
I mean, I don't have enough room in my office to have that much green screen. Right. Okay. What was my question I was going to ask you? Music. Yeah. How do you do the music? Cause I think it's a external tool, right?
Yeah. So in this case, one of the tools that I have is this. This is a mixer. And by the way, this is a live camera. This is my hand. Haha. So for those who can't see it, I have a camera onto a mixer, and I basically hook my iPad to this. So that's how I can be so fast with music. One is I can go here, and then now I just fade this in because this mixing board has this. This is a direct USB connection to my computer. So I don't have to click any buttons. Everyone else has to click at least 3 buttons to get music in. And if somebody's sharing the screen, you can't do it either, so you lose the ability. But me, I'm always available to do this.
Scroll it back before I get YouTube zinged.
I know this is Aretha Franklin. That's right. You know who's zooming who. I'll go to my royalty free library now too.
So most folks aren't going to be able to get a mixing board like that. Is there a way to do it without the fancy mixing board?
No, but this mixing board, the version underneath this one is $90.
Oh,
there's not an excuse, and I'll drop a link for Candace to share with you my whole equipment list of stuff I've tested. I have a whole closet full of stuff that didn't work from Amazon.
I love it. I actually used to have a mixing board when I first started the podcast. I did the whole thing with the mixing board and all that stuff. And the audio was a little bit better in those days. I'm lazy. I'm a lazy podcaster, but a lot of podcasters are. But yeah, the mixing board did make a difference. Maybe it's time to get one.
Yeah, well, that's how this microphone is running through. You know, what's really cool about having the mixing board too is that you have to remember though, but your videos that you're playing on your computer, the sound will also go directly through without sharing. Of course, you have to remember your sound will go directly through without sharing if you've ever inadvertently played a video in a virtual meeting. You have to just know that. But again, I can do that without having to remember checking a box, which is, to me, one of the top three technical problems. People who share videos don't check the two boxes. One is to make it look good as a video, and the second one is to share the sound. And quite often, you've been in a meeting going, can't hear the sound, right? And somebody has to like, oh, God, I got to do it again, right?
Okay, so how are you doing the fancy stuff with changing your background?
Okay, great. So number one, the way that I present, and again, I don't recommend this for everyone, but there is a feature that's built into Zoom that you can do almost the same thing. You can see over here on my left, this is PowerPoint, right? And this is presenter view. And I put presenter view here so I can see my notes, right? While I'm barely talking to you, so I can stay, keep eye contact, right? And now this thing up here is called OBS, or Open Broadcast Software, which has the ridiculously high price of zero. It's free. So you just got to learn how to use this. And for those who have read that there's a learning curve with it, I just call it the PowerPoint of live video. All right. And so if you understand PowerPoint, you can understand this. Now, the last thing here is this is all these buttons here are what's called a Stream Deck from a company called Elgato. And so while I have this here and I make scenes is like everything that you see here. What's key here is now I have access to a button push to them. So quite often, right, you fumble around going, what scene am I trying to get? And you accidentally get the wrong one. But now I can do things like, let's go to my office, right? Let's see the sunset. How about we go and hang out in my backyard? They're all a button push away, and that's what makes it fast. So when I teach a Stream Deck to, I actually just taught Stream Deck to my advanced producers, and the three things they loved about it is you can automate chats and text. Like I can put my cursor in the chat and hit a bunch of buttons and I will perfectly put all the chats that I want to give to you. Like here's how to contact me. Here's my calendar. Here's my book, right? Here's a preview, first three chapters of my book.
And you're doing that through OBS? OBS is the
Stream Deck.
Stream Deck
is really a cool automation tool. So here, she's going to see this. She'll share these with later to schedule a meeting with you here.
The show notes are going to be full of all it. Are going to be full of it.
So there's a bunch of things like that. And of course, too, Candace, right, if she wanted to be interviewed, I have a button and tell people if you want to be interviewed on my show, here's a button. All you got to do is click a link, click interview, and you figure out what time you want to come. And now I have over 80 episodes of my own podcast.
Congratulations. The Stream Deck just has all that saved and you push a button and it does it.
Yeah.
How many buttons are on it?
Well, there are small versions as little as 6, 15. And then I got the XL 32, and then I went crazy, right? And so I got a gift card from somebody. So I bought two Stream Decks now because I tried. You can actually turn an iPad or an iPhone, any phone or Android device into a Stream Deck, but you
really
keep reconnecting it. So for as little as $8 to $10 a month, you can get that. But I just didn't like the fact that you had to like push two buttons every time I rebooted my computer. So I went back to all the hard buttons and now I have two of them. One's dedicated to video and one's dedicated to text and audio. And so
the Stream Deck just plugs into your computer and when you're on Zoom, you push a button and it works.
That's right. wait. Smile. Wait, Candace, we're going to take a picture. 3, 2, 1.
And that did it really take a screenshot?
In this case, I'm just playing a sound, do know how to take it. I can actually automate it to take a screenshot too.
That's hilarious. This is definitely, if you're listening to this episode on, you know, a podcast player and you're listening to the audio version, please go find it on YouTube or go to Mom Geek or Gratitude Geek and look for the episode with John Chen, because you need to see the visuals. You need to see the visuals. So behind you is a graphic that has a cool building and a picture of your book and a picture of you. Is that, did you just create that in like Canva and it's your backdrop, or is that through OBS?
Yeah, this is a royalty-free background video. So that's the start. And this is like, here, watch, let me decode this one a little bit here too, where we're talking about what are all the different things here. So in this case, one of them is my video, right? So I'm now moving myself around. So like, here's the video. The next one is the video of the background. Okay, so I moved that. My book is actually installed on that video, so I didn't have to put it here. And this last one, oh, look, I have a bunch of things that are back here. Like, I stacked three things on here. Normally, I have an avatar. Let's see, I can get this one out of the way, up here on the right. But in this case, I have this cool new thing because PCMA gave me an award for being the Digital Event Strategist of the Year this year.
And congratulations.
So, yeah, thank you. And now watch, I can put these all back in place. One, two, three, four. And now this whole scene is back together.
Wow. And that's all OBS. I've tried playing with OBS and it's above my pay grade for the amount of time I wanted to spend on it. So do you know about Prezi for Zoom?
Yes.
Okay, so I have found Prezi for Zoom to be so much fun.
Yes.
You know, and so it's a, I mean, if you want to talk about it, I think it's a good, alternative.
Yeah.
It's free and it still does kind of fun stuff. You know, it's top secret. It's a top secret, but it still does fun stuff. So talk to me about Prezi. I mean,
Prezi for Zoom, of course, Prezi came out as a quote unquote PowerPoint alternative and uses navigation, which is really cool, which is you can make your whole presentation really big and then do things like zoom in on this part for this slide and then come over here for this slide. And so it kind of takes you on a journey. Right. And so that's why Prezi made it before the pandemic. And then during the pandemic, they are like, well, let's put our video in here. And this is, to me, this is the most important thing, is solving your speaker presence. Solving your speaker presence. Because the default in Zoom is when we share a screen is that you become a postage stamp.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not cool for you, should be for you as a speaker, right? You're missing things like this. I'm doing emphatics, mm-hmm. such as body language. Yeah. I'm channeling my Italian or whatever you want to call it. And that's, I think, important, right, to the attendee. And for you as a speaker, more importantly, you know, that's the, what you get paid to do is to convey messages. And you can't do it if you're a postage.
Yeah. And so, that's really the frustration I have with the Zoom is when you're sharing your slide deck, it takes up the whole screen and you're this little tiny picture. And, you know, so I'm actually going to do my first presentation where I'm not using the slide deck. I'm using Prezi.
Yes.
And I've never done it before, so I'll probably have to practice it tomorrow, but I'm doing this Thursday morning. I have it all planned out in my head. And I went and I asked the person who's running the meeting to please pin me. And he didn't. He's like, I can't pin you. And I was like, yes, you can. So then I had to explain how to pin the featured speaker if you're the host of the meeting, which is really easy to pin a speaker. Here's a hot Zoom tip. Ding, 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 ding. Hot Zoom tip. If you want to pin the featured speaker when you are doing a Zoom meeting, you click on participants, you find the speaker, you hover over the speaker's name, three dots will appear, you click on the three dots, and then you click pin. And then when they're done speaking, you go do the same thing and you unpin them.
Now, let me help you, I think, on this one. If you have three or more people in the meeting, even if somebody has their camera off, you can spotlight.
Oh,
right. And so spotlight, here's the difference, right? But pin is usually local, like it only matters to you. Like that's what you're
I was saying. Using the wrong word, spotlight. And, okay.
Yeah, spotlight though will change the view for almost everybody. They can override you, but spotlight is ideally what I would do is spotlight because then you take the whole screen. And when you take the whole screen, then you, again, you have the maximum amount of speaker presence.
Do you get to it the same way that I just explained it?
Yeah, but you just click spotlight.
Okay.
So pin and spotlight are like next to each other on the menu.
So I have to resend that email that I just sent. But then so that's a really nice thing for you to do for your guest is you spotlight them and then they're like the focus of the conversation. You just have to remember to unspotlight them when the interaction is going on. So there's a little extra work, but
let me add this part too. Candace, when I produce, because again, I'm a producer for other people. Let's say if I was your producer, number one is I spotlight when you come on, right? And I would do an intro for you, you know, something like, let's see.
Coming up on the stage next, here she is, right? The mom geek,
Candace Nesbitt. Okay, so and then spotlight, right? And then she takes the whole stage. Now, one of the things, though, is that Candace likes to be interactive. So what she could do is then watch or even have like just verbalize with me as the producer and saying, oh, I see Tommy's got a question. So if Tommy has his camera on, I can spotlight him with you on stage, right? Even though there might be 400 or 500 people over here, everybody should only see you and Tommy. And now the two of you can have a conversation, right? And now you go, thank you so much, Tommy. And now I take Tommy off and you get the screen again. So you basically treat spotlight as the main stage, and you bring people into the spotlight. You can actually bring up to 9 people. Right. We've had these crazy things, Candace, where we bring like 8 people, or you run a panel, you're the host, and there's 3 people in the panel. So it's just the 4 of you that you can see, and I can just leave you on so that anyone can talk at any time. That to me, controlling what people see in a meeting, I think is one of the ways to like up the production value of what's going on.
Yeah. I love that. Okay. So far we have paid tools that John has mentioned, and then we've had free tools. So for the cheap people who can't afford the big expensive stuff or just want to keep their budget low, if you're on a budget friendly stuff, we've got Prezi, which is free. It's Prezi for Zoom, and it's an app. And then we've got spotlighting the featured speaker. That's the hot tip number 2. Okay. Hot tip number 3.
Virtual. Okay. Have you ever used PowerPoint as virtual background in Zoom?
No. Let's learn about that. Okay, hot tip number 3.
So let me just check. Wait, do you have actually any slide deck available?
I can open a PowerPoint if you want me to.
But I just need you to know where it is. So keep it closed, but do you know where it is, like its file location? This is unrehearsed, by the way. I just want to let all your podcasts.
I know. Let me open up something. Okay.
Just got to remember which folder it's in.
Okay, I got one. Oh, okay. It has to be in a folder.
Well, okay. Somewhere, I don't care. Any view file system, right?
Okay, so where is it?
I don't know.
Oh man, it's really deep. I have to get really deep to get to this.
Copy okay. Your desktop.
Tell me how to get there.
Okay, so do you know where it is, right?
I can find it. Yeah.
Okay, so close the PowerPoint.
Close the PowerPoint.
Okay, now you're gonna click share screen.
Share screen. I love this. I hope you guys are watching. Okay, I'm sharing screen.
Like I said, this is real time. We did not rehearse this. Click advanced at the top. See basic and advanced at the top?
Basic and advanced.
Yes. Okay, now on the top left, you see a pie chart. It says PowerPoint or slides as virtual background.
Yes. Click on that.
Then click the blue button, share, and then find your file, and then click open. Oh, what?
Pull the phone.
What's in your calendar, rethinking the sales funnel? What we're seeing now is Candace in the bottom right. Now let's do some 2 really fun things. First, click on your face and tell me when you see a blue box.
I see a blue box.
Okay, drag yourself across your slide, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh.
That's good.
Oh, yeah. I like it over here, though, in that corner.
Okay, now grab the corner and make yourself as big as possible. Now look, we solved speaker presence. Now at the bottom center, click out of the blue box and you'll see a left and right, and you should be able to go to your next slide.
Hold on. Here we go. Do-do-do. Dun-da-da! Yes. Yay!
See, and now what you would do is redesign your slide deck to have all your content left and right of your head, and now you've restored presence. Everybody has this, whoever has a paid Zoom account.
Okay, so for my presentation on Thursday, I was gonna use Prezi. I'm gonna do this. Oh my goodness gracious. This has been probably one of the most fun podcasts I've ever done. All right.
And then on the top center, click stop share, because what the stop share button is in a different place. And I once ended an entire meeting because I was in charge because I clicked the wrong button.
There. Yeah. Wasn't it? That stop share is normally at the bottom. How interesting. Yeah,
this was top center.
Yeah. Wow. That was fun. Okay. You've just changed my presentation on Thursday.
Bravo. Bravo.
I love it. That was also free. That was also a free way to make your meetings more engaging. You just have to make sure that your slide deck is designed so that you can be in the middle of the screen or off to the side. Well, it only makes the image was a rectangle, so I wouldn't be able to put myself full size to the side. I only had the option to make myself bigger or smaller and move it from side to side. That's correct. I so you're in the middle of the screen. If you're full size image, you're in the middle of the screen.
Yeah.
And so the content that you want to share needs to be on the sides of you.
Yeah. But you could purposely do this, which is go and like, you have to
lean the
camera, right, to do like this or this. It's kind of weird. Yes. It's different, but you could, if you wanted to be beside your content.
That is so cool. And then the way to make it seamless so you don't screw up is that you just make the PowerPoint your background at the beginning of the prompt. At the beginning of the meeting, and then when it's your turn to talk, that's when you start navigating.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what I've also done, here's a cool tip too. First off, this is a top 1% trick. What I'm telling you is, out of over 100 presenters, less than one of them is using this and using it well. So you can start, if you learn this tip from this podcast right now, you can ascend to the top of virtual speakers.
Yeah.
Like the second part is, then if you design for engagement, you can leave the Zoom in gallery. So what I've done before is that I present for like 10 minutes and then I stop presenting and I go to gallery and talk to the group. And then when I go to present again, I get a second slide deck, right? And then start presenting. Because by the way, if you reshare, it goes back to slide one. So you gotta like advance. So I've taken entire slide decks and then cut them up into multiple files and use them to engage, to engage the group at different ways at different times.
How do you do it quickly?
Well, you queue it up. What you do is while you're talking, like you have parts, this is kind of like theater, right? Which is while you're talking to the audience, you are already clicking buttons and now everything is open all the way to that last dialogue box that says open the deck. And then as soon as you're like, okay, I'm done talking to the crowd, and then you could click a button, you're back to presenting again.
So you've got to be multitasking.
A little bit, yes.
Yeah.
Nobody can control this for you except for you. So yes, yeah. So it's a little more difficult. But if you have somebody else too, you give them a minute and hand it to them saying, hey, could you answer this question? And then you've got about a minute, right? It only takes like 20, 30 seconds to set it up.
That's so cool. Okay, so now what? What else? What else do we need to know? What's tip number 5? All right, we're probably on tip number 27. So what's tip number 27?
Tip number 27. I just taught a class this morning that's called Empower Your Next Virtual Meeting with No Additional Tech.
Yes, we need more of that.
Right. And this is like my second most popular talk now because the need is rising. So let me just ask Candace, even you. Right? A certified geek is a little burned out on technology right now.
Oh, wrong one. I am. I am a little burnt out on technology. So I have non-technology solutions.
Here, I got a martini glass. How about that? So we took the inspiration from our good friend Elizabeth Gilbert. Do you remember Elizabeth Gilbert?
Oh, Eat, Pray, Love?
Yeah, very good.
Okay. I hate that book.
You probably
it was so boring. I couldn't finish it. And then they turned it into a movie. And I was like, how did they make this boring ass book into a movie?
So now it only takes 2 hours instead of like 20 hours of your life. So Elizabeth Gilbert, though, really, truly did. I wasn't really a fan before, but she gave one of the best keynotes in the last 3 years, virtual keynotes in the last 3 years. And how do we know? 38 minutes into the 45-minute keynote, somebody chats, I feel like I'm having a one-on-one with Elizabeth Gilbert at an Italian cafe right now.
Wow.
And then I look at the participants list, which is over here on the right. 650 people are logged in.
Wow.
And I go, how do you do that?
Yeah.
And it took me a year, and me and 12 other of the top virtual presenters, we just tore apart this keynote and we found 8 things. I'm going to give you the top 3.
Okay.
We found 8 things that she was doing that we were not doing. And it took me over a year to have the courage to give an entire presentation where I don't use any other tech. I don't change my background, right? I have the base level. I got a camera, I have a mic, right? I've got lighting, I've got strong internet. But I don't change anything. I don't use any other tech during an entire 1 hour keynote.
Wow.
And it terrified me.
I'm sure it did.
And that's one of the secrets. So here are the 3 things I'll share with you. Number 1, vulnerability. She shared it like from the start, she kind of shared, you know, some vulnerability. Like it was funny at first, which was like, hey, I'm in my yoga pants. All right. And that like immediately loosened up the crowd a little bit. Like everyone's like, yeah, I'm in my yoga pants too. But then later she said, I thought it was a great quote. And she said, you know, what's not scary is writing a best-selling book. She sold 16 million, by the way.
I know. I think I'm one of the few people in the world who has the feelings I have about that book.
That's okay. You can have your feelings. She said that was okay. Right? She's like, everyone can have their own feelings, right? She just made her own art. Okay. Anyway, so she said, what's not scary is writing a best-selling book. What's really scary is writing the book after the best-selling book.
Oh, God, I bet. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And again, you might not like the book, but you might empathize, I could say it almost.
Yeah.
as
totally empathize with that.
Which is, she wrote the second book afterwards, and she then called her publisher, and she goes, by the way, I finished the manuscript, and I want to tell you something. I'm not sending it to you. And the publisher's like, why? What are you talking about? She goes, the pressure caught up to her. And like all the expectations as an artist of like, you know, that 16 million kind of messed her up a little bit. And she was willing to admit it. And by the time she got done with that manuscript, she said, this is not me. And so I'm going to delay giving you this manuscript. I'm going to rewrite it until it's something I feel like I want to give out. And that's the second part, right? I said, vulnerability is one. Authenticity is number two. And she had the authenticity to say, this book is not me, right? This book is all the pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And so she like rewrote it. And then also during that 2 years, she kind of said that I had to be okay with people not liking this second book. Cause she wrote it the first going, oh, it has to be better. Like, you know, like that's what we do as humans. And then she goes, no, I just got to speak the truth. And then it's not my job. It's not my job to make it a bestseller. It's your job, the reader. If you like it, then you make it a bestseller. And so it took her 2 years to go through that process. And I thought that was really cool. So authenticity, like what's something that we could share about ourselves that makes people feel more connected to us, right? Again, like, I'm not a big production guy. There's definitely people in the production world who are way better than I am. And what I can also tell you is that I don't think there are that many people who know how to use all this technology, though, specifically to be engaging. And that's my unique spot. So I don't use billion-dollar cameras. Like, it's almost better. Like, I can show you how to use, you know, your simple webcam, right? And how to turn something into really something that's really engaging, right? With all this engaging stuff. So that's vulnerability and that's authenticity. And the last one is storytelling. Storytelling. So she tells these amazing stories like that one, right? It's not about writing the bestseller. It's about, you know, being afraid of writing the book afterwards. And so look at how you use storytelling, because storytelling, of course, the oldest form of training in existence. And when you tell a great story and you have somebody hanging on the one key piece of the story, then that's where you're going to get the training. Here, I'll actually share one from this weekend. So this weekend, you and I were talking about, we're recording this in May. It's Asian Pacific Islander Heritage Month.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I do is I volunteer a lot of my time during this month to elevate. And I actually co-founded a group called API, or Asian Pacific Islander Event Profs, for event professionals. Event Profs is the most popular hashtag in the event industry. And so I'm running this live stream. It's got three cameras. I'm live switching the whole thing. I produce for 6 hours straight. Right? Almost with no breaks.
It's incredible.
And 2 hours into the program, the hardline internet at Seattle Center dies.
Oh.
And I know this because all of my computers all of a sudden go dead, right? And they're like, can't talk to Zoom, right? What's going on? And so everything that was connected died. Now, right, in this moment, you're trying to figure out, because I'm running like 15 live streams at the same time. And I was just like, number one, I had somebody with me and I'm like, go talk to Seattle Center. I just lost my hard line. But the second part is that in virtual, that you should, all of you listening to this should be ready for. Plan B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, all the way through Z and keep going again. In this case, I'm running a 5G mobile, like a grade hotspot. And it was running as a backup. And it didn't switch over on the Wi-Fi, but all I did was unclip and then reclip an Ethernet cable. And I was able to restore Zoom connection and all 15 live streams before they disconnected. That's how fast I did it. And so that's like, those are production things. Basically, to save the whole show.
Well, you're a professional, so you can act accordingly with the experience and expertise that you have.
Yeah, it sounds great and all, Candace, until you get put into that situation, right? Almost everybody who knows you, who's either presented on stage or produced a large conference and something starts going horribly wrong, right? You know that your emotions hijack you faster than anything else. Your amygdala attacks you and goes, "Rawr!" And you start sweating profusely on stage, right? And one of the skills that we teach all of our producers, though, is stay calm.
Yeah. I'm a little mad at you. No, because we have met each other multiple times, and this is the first I've heard about this organization. Asian Island, say it again, Asian Pacific Islander speaker. Tell me the name of the group again.
Hashtag API Event Pro. So here's a great story behind that, right? We're talking about storytelling, Candace. A bunch of us in the Asian Pacific or in the event profession just kind of bemoan the fact of like things like not enough of representation of speakers. Actually, here's one of the other key facts. Despite Asian Pacific Islanders having 200% of the advanced degrees, like bachelor's and higher's, we actually hold 50% or less of the executive jobs.
Yeah.
Like I had to cheat. I was at Microsoft and I like hit the, what we call the bamboo ceiling, which is right. And just, you can't ascend any higher. And before I got the next big opportunity, I like wrote my entire business plan and planned to leave. And that's when somebody asked me.
Wow.
To like join, you know, go the next rank up. And I had to tell them no. Talk about authenticity. I had no. And I said, I can't tell you right now why. In 6 months, I'll tell you. But I want to tell you that I appreciate you that you told me, right? But that's, and in 6 months, I told them, I started my own company. I just basically what we call cheated. To get into the executive rank, I started my own company.
Yeah, which is, unfortunately, that is, for a lot of marginalized communities, that is the only way to go.
And it doesn't have to be that way.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it doesn't. It doesn't. I have a story. So yeah. John didn't know it. We were talking away and I was mad at him at the beginning of the conversation because he didn't identify that I am a fellow Asian American because I blend. You know, I tend to blend, but I'm in a board meeting. I was considering joining a board of directors for a nonprofit organization. And I'm in the board meeting and they're talking about, and it's to serve underserved communities, teenagers in underserved communities. And I was there as a public speaking coach. I was offering public speaking courses for the teenagers. And they kept talking about how they need some Asian representation. We need Asian representation in this room. And I'm looking around the room and I'm going, I'm right here. I'm right here, you know, but that's the thing that I just sort of always blended in everywhere I went.
Well, I'll share with that too, Candace, that, you know, here in America, my family also chose the path of assimilation. So I grew up in Stockton, California. Right. It's Stockton is the agriculture. So it's kind of farm town.
I'm from Salinas.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah, so you know exactly what I'm talking about.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
There's not a lot of us there. And the path of assimilation, for those who don't know, is just blend in. Like the strategy of blending in was trying not to stick out. Right. And so I once did a keynote in Beijing and I opened with my keynote, right, telling people that I'm sorry that I don't speak Mandarin or Cantonese, right? So that I have an interpreter who's saying this, right? And then I said, but I just want to let you know, right? I grew up in America and I speak perfect Californese. Candace, do you know what perfect Californese sounds like?
I do.
It sounds something like this, Candace. Dude.
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 So those who don't know what we're doing too, in Chinese, you have accent marks, right? And they have different shapes, such as up, right? Down, like up and down. And so anyways, they all laughed, which was really the key. And then I delivered my keynote.
My husband gets really mad at me when I call him dude. It's like, I'm sorry, you can take the girl out of California, but you can't take the California out of the girl. I haven't lived there since I was 26 years old. I am now 53, but man, I am a California girl.
That path of assimilation, though, is what made me push away my culture, right? And even so far, like actually at Microsoft, one of the things I was famous for is I created a social group called Dudes at Microsoft.com. It was actually a group. And I told people too, early on, this is like years ago. And I said, let me just tell you too, this is a non-gender specific dudes. Like we have dudes and dudettes, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. People don't understand that dude is all inclusive.
Yeah,
dude is the California version of y'all.
Yeah. It
includes
everybody.
Yeah. All y'all and dudes are synonyms. All right.
And then in the last 10 years, I went back and I said, why did I do this? I really want to embrace my own culture. So I started working more with Seattle and other Asian Pacific Islander nonprofits and businesses, and then volunteering my time. And then that led me to this. In the history of Facebook, nobody had ever thought to create a Facebook group called API Event Profs until we did it 2 years ago.
Wow. Wow.
And there's a group for everything.
Yeah. There are multiple groups for everything. How interesting. So I grew up in, like I said, you're from Stockton. I'm from Salinas. Salinas is a different, back in the day, Salinas is a different environment. It was bordered Fort Ord, which is an army base. And so I went to high school with a whole lot of people who looked just like me, because we were all daughters and sons of officers and their Asian wives. So this is the 80s. Okay, I'm not stereotyping. I'm explaining something that from the 80s, which was a truth back in the day. So I, you know, all of my friends looked just like me, and we had shared experiences, and we all had Asian mothers, and we could all commiserate. And then it was so that felt really comfortable for me, right? And then I left Salinas and I moved to San Francisco. And which is, you're gonna say there's a lot of Asians in San Francisco, which is true, but not where I worked. And so, you know, the whole assimilation thing happens, and nobody has shared experiences. You know, I mean, when you go from being really comfortable where everybody has the same experience that you have to nobody quite understanding, you know, and then all the jokes about tiger moms and dragon moms or whatever the words are, you know, it's, you know, and the expectations and the disappointments. And, you know, I'm sorry, if you have an Asian mother, she's always disappointed in you. You're never good enough.
Candace, can I do my best joke for that?
Yes, please.
Okay. You know, a kid I knew who was Asian came with a report card and had a B on it, right? And the parent goes, you know, we're not Bijans. We're Asians.
Oh my gosh, that's fantastic.
Thank you very much.
That's fantastic. Oh man, an A minus. If I got an A minus.
Oh, the A minus is like an F.
The disappointment on my mother's face if she saw an A minus.
It was like, you like dread going home. You like walk around the block 50 times without report card.
An A minus. Oh my gosh. And I graduated number 7 in my class of 400. Okay, again, I went to school with a lot of Asians and I was number 7, right? Yeah. And, you know, why wasn't I number 2? Why wasn't I number 1?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, I know. It's like the martial arts expert, right? The martial art expert who, if they're not complaining, is when you know you did good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. All right. So we need to wrap up soon, but let's just talk about the episode is dropping a couple of months after this conversation takes place. So Asian Pacific Islander Heritage Month is over. But let's just talk about some of the ways that we can improve the dialogue between non-Asians and Asians in America. What are some thoughts that you have on that?
Well, the number one is, now that I've done this work for about 2 years, I am completely dedicated to the phenomenon known as allyship. Here, I'll give you a great example. I'm working as a producer for a virtual conference here in Seattle, right? And so I'm like running rehearsals with speakers and all sorts of other stuff prior to the actual conference. And it takes my very good friend, Joan Eisenstadt, like a legend in the meetings industry. She's one of our allies. She's spending a lot of time with us, right? And she is the white Jewish woman, right, in the house. And she knows that. But she came back to me and she sends me an email and she goes, John, the speaker list for your conference you're working on that just got published today has no Asian speakers. And I missed it. I was right, Candace. I missed it. And that just like, that's the light bulb in the head. Why do Asian Pacific Islanders need allies? I'm just saying, even for us who are extroverted, who are trained, who are like in the, who are like that care about this stuff, we miss it. And why could that be? Like, that means that my brain, right, from birth, for some or another, has been taught a whole bunch of things to, like, not recognize this. Even after trying, like, the last, I told you, 10 years, I've been trying to be aware. And so it took her. And she came in there, and I went back and looked at the list, and I'm like, oh, she's right. And so what was great about that, like, what here are some of the things that API event profs are doing that to make a difference. We knew the event organizers. We went immediately to them. We told them this fact, and they immediately installed four of us in a panel. And that's a change. That's a positive change.
Yeah. The fact that they identified it. How do you feel about folks that say that that allyship and identifying these gaps has the opposite effect?
Then you're on the privilege list. You probably don't experience any been in any day, right? All you know, the number one thing, one of my good friends, Lonnie here in Seattle, is one of the top diversity trainers, and he creates this experience where you see this. He also wrote a book about 10 people who were members of hate groups and then left those hate groups. And the summary of the book is this: all 10 of them made a friend in the group they used to hate.
Wow.
So you want to take one action, right? If you don't understand the Asian Pacific Islander plight or Black or any other, you know, color, purple, whatever, go make a friend in there and talk to them.
Yeah. Listen, interesting.
Right. Listen intently and you'll figure out, and then you'll start to go like, oh, you're right.
Do you think it'll work the other way? Could an Asian reach out to a white supremacist and say, hey, let's have a conversation? Would that work? Or does it have to come from the other way?
I mean, it could work. You never know, right? I mean, the friendships start either way. I mean, it would obviously be a bold move. You know, there's like a power diversity there, which makes it more challenging from one person to the other. I don't know, for whatever reason.
Yeah. And
I know for myself personally, I can speak on my house personally, is that I reach out to people all the time, right? I reach out, like, again, if, like, you know, like in the, what, past, what, 4 years ago, social media went bonkers.
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons. And I had people that were attacking stuff on my social media. And instead of just, like, removing them, I would let them state anything they want as long as they could back it up with a fact, right? Research or science or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Most of the time that I did that, they were unable to do so. And then when they just went straight for the attack, right, of like say calling somebody a snowflake was one of them or something else, I said, do you have a fact to back this up? Because I've got my finger on the button. And they're like, then reiterated, right, just some attack with no basis, no purpose, no, you know, explanation behind it. Then I removed them.
Yeah.
But I told them, I gave them warnings, and I said, look, I'm willing to have an open conversation and a debate about some of these things. Some of them might actually agree with you, but without that debate, without us coming together and speaking, you know, either truth or facts from somewhere, even if like they're flawed sources, at least you could tell me where they're coming from. That was really the killer, was people who are just stating things that they believe to be true, but with no basis whatsoever.
Yeah. Well, and or if they back it up with a fact or a document that's fake news, like, you know, or whatever.
But yeah. I can go back. Yeah, I would go back and refute that, saying, oh, I see you think this is true and this is what I think is true. Right. And again, we can both come around. My stuff might be flawed, too. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, I'm the first to admit it if I make a mistake.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because no one's perfect. That's the thing about snowflakes. So you know how brains work. So you say snowflake 5 minutes ago or however long it was. And immediately I went, I hate that term. I hate it when people call other people snowflakes. And then my brain is going through this. I'm trying to listen to you. My brain is doing this calculation in my head. And I finally settled on snowflakes. There are no two snowflakes that are alike. They're all unique and individual. They come in all different shapes and sizes. They're beautiful. They're multidimensional. Snowflakes are gorgeous. Why wouldn't you want to be a snowflake?
Yeah, totally unique, right? Yeah, crystalline.
Yeah.
Snowflakes too can gather together and create an avalanche.
Yeah, they can gather together in groups and create an avalanche. You know,
this is like what I love about like when my kids went to school, they had a really cool debate program. And they needed to, like, at least once, if not multiple times in their high school career, they had to take a side that they didn't believe to argue it enough to convince somebody else. And they were able to do that. That's impressive.
Wow, that is impressive. That's very impressive. Because sometimes it's hard. It's really hard. I mean, the thing, so I've told this story on the show before, but I haven't told it to you. So I'm going to tell it to you. When I was in my early 20s, I had a Volkswagen Rabbit convertible. It was white with red interior, very snazzy, very sexy. I was known as the Farfignugan lady. And the car was 10 years old when I bought it. So by the time I was in my 20s, it was getting to be 15 years old. So it started to fall apart. And I lived in the San Francisco Bay Area. I was single. And I took it to a mechanic in San Francisco or in Berkeley, California. And the first time I took it in, the mechanic said, your bearings need to be packed in your wheels. And I believed him. So I had him pack my bearings. I took the car in 6 months later and he said, your bearings and your wheels need to be packed. I said, you told me that the last time I brought it in. And so I went back to, I told you I'm from Salinas, but I'm actually from Castroville. So Castroville is a small town outside of Salinas, right on Highway 1, right? Okay. Yeah. So, I called my mom and I said, I got to bring my car down there. I can't bring my car to any mechanics up here. I don't know who to trust, but I trust Hans. Hans was my mechanic in Castroville. Everybody who had a German or European car took their car to Hans and because everybody trusted Hans. Hans was probably in his late 60s or 70s. He was a very kind man, obviously German, thick German accent. He had a staff in his auto shop. He was just so kind. I was this kid who drove this snazzy car, you know, 20 something years old. He always took the time to have a conversation with me. Aww. He would have a meaningful conversation with me. You know, he was so kind. And then the handle fell off on my car door and he replaced it at no charge. So he went above and beyond the service, you know, above and beyond the call of service. And then one day we're having a conversation. He's leaning against my car and he tells me about how he had been a Nazi soldier. And it flipped my whole reality, right? My whole reality gets flipped because here is this super kind man who wouldn't hurt a fly that was so gentle and nice. And he had been a Nazi soldier. And his whole demeanor changed when he talked about it. Like his shoulders slumped. He looked down on the ground and he shook his head and he said, I loved that son of a bitch. And he was so ashamed that this had happened to him. Right. And so that story reminds me to be compassionate because we don't know a person's circumstances. Right. We don't know a person's circumstances. So sometimes I have to remember, okay, what would Hans do? Right. What would Hans do? Hans would be embarrassed about something that he had done for the rest of his life, but he would go on to be a very kind person who impacted a whole bunch of lives. So yeah, that's a tough story, isn't it?
Oh, I think it's an amazing story. Because I think in this field, I think it's harder to be the person, right, who could be harder for the person on the other side, right? Who is doing the racism as opposed to being the victim on the other side or whatever you want to call it, the receiver, right? In the mm-hmm. center. I had a really powerful experience when I went to Tuskegee, Alabama, and then went to Montgomery. And Montgomery has this amazing museum that you have to see. And it's all around the Black experience here in America. And I just, what are those people too who did this system, wasn't thinking about it, and later on realize what they were doing?
Yeah.
And you got to live with the guilt, right? It's kind of like we were talking about this corona guilt. Corona guilt is if you accidentally broke coronavirus into your house. Nobody talks about the mental stress or damage done for you going, it was my fault.
Yeah. And, right? Yeah, that guilt is real. I mean, in January of 2020, I was at an event. This is January 2020. I was at an event with 80 other people. One person showed up sick.
Yes.
By the time the event was over, everyone was sick. We all got on airplanes and went home.
And then in March,
they talk about, I came home really sick, gave it to my husband. In March, they start talking about this in late February, early March, they start talking about this thing and then they shut down the world. And I'm, my husband and I look at each other and say, we had Corona in,
we had
COVID in January. And I was like, I was on an airplane with 200 people.
Yeah.
I gave it to 200 people. And yeah, I do feel really guilty about it.
So,
I didn't even know.
I'll leave the last metaphor with this too, Candace, which is, I think maybe virtual meetings are a little bit the same way, which is like, if you've ever hosted a meeting and had it be terrible, right? This is kind of like the same position. So that's what I hope people get out of this talk, right? One is two is watch how engaging this talk is now too, because Candace and I are being vulnerable with each other with topics we don't usually talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And, mm-hmm. and the second one is, that's one of the ways to make a virtual meeting more interesting, more engaging, is to be real, right? Is to do these things that we're talking here. So I hope that each of you, you know, it's okay. Everybody's ran a bad virtual meeting, myself included. I've 35 years of experience and I'll still get caught on mute. Right. And so
almost every time.
Yeah, well, and so one I want to give you this is, it's not your fault. And what I mean by that is that the technology is not exactly designed yet for humans to get all the cues. And the second part is do better. What can you take away from this call? Like, we already gave you a whole bunch of tips. One of them can change your next virtual meeting to make it better, right? Tolerable. People even at the end of the meeting might say those magic words. This is the best virtual meeting I've ever been on.
Mm.
And that's what we hope to give for you as a gift.
Mm. That was beautiful. We are way over time, but you've already given so many tools and tips and techniques, but what's your favorite? What is your favorite marketing tool, tip, or technique?
Oh my gosh. Can I give a new one?
Yeah. I want you to.
Well, number one is, all right, this, we used to laugh, this tip right here, like, install a back camera no matter what your setup is, right? We call this the money button, because this button has gotten me more business, because as soon as people see this, they immediately say, Candace, they go like, oh God, I'll never be able to do that. So I'm going to, you know, hire a producer.
Is that just a webcam? What kind of camera is it?
It's like, hi.
It's hi. Like,
so I switched to another camera. But the other one is this. I'm going to give a little tool or tip here. And this is a new tool called Video Ask.
And Video Ask.
Yeah, this is my latest marketing tool. So after the show, Candace is going to present this link, and you can ask me any question you want. I might rename it now. It's WWJD. Was what would John do, Candace? And you take your phone or computer, and you record a short video, and you can say, "Hey, my problem's engagement." Oh, and my last call, it was. People multitask during my meeting.
Interesting.
Right? And I'll tell you, if you actually ask that question, I'll tell you my number one solution for it. And all I do is I run Video Ask on my phone and I just hit reply. And then I record a short video, 30, 60 seconds or less. And I tell you exactly what the answer is.
So this is kind of similar to SpeakPipe, only better. Because SpeakPipe is really old technology. I don't even have it on my system anymore because nobody ever used it. But this seems, I'm going to definitely check that out. And you can turn the answers into short form video. That is brilliant. I am definitely going to start using that.
I will be using this. So for those who are listening, well, it'll probably be over by then, but I will be speaking at ATD, the Association of Talent Development in San Diego. And I'll be in the Adobe Connect booth producing 12 hours of training that virtual people can actually log into.
Oh, fun.
It's going to be super cool.
Super fun. Okay. I hate for this conversation to end because we are having so much fun. And if you guys didn't enjoy this conversation, you're boring as whatever. Because this was, and you got some really good actionable tips to make your meetings more engaging. So, wow. Thank you.
I got one message for you to end today. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Thank you for attending the performance. And a special thanks to all those who helped with the show.
Yeah, but we're not over yet because you have to answer one more question. So this is your moment of gratitude. For whom or what are you most grateful?
Oh, whom or what am I most grateful? Today, I'm most grateful for my girlfriend, Donna, who joined me at Asian Pacific Islander Heritage Month as a white woman and helped me produce all day. But she also, you know, through my whole day is really a support for everything. We we came together during the pandemic. So we spent the whole pandemic together. And, you know, couple-wise, relationship-wise, we're actually watching Love is Blind right now, watching couples blow up. And all we can say is that we get along, and I appreciate that. So I'm so grateful to Donna Cunningham.
Thanks for tuning in to Gratitude Geek, the relationship marketing podcast that helps DIY marketers attract raving fans and repeat buyers. Make sure to visit gratitudegeek.com for the show notes, where you can find links to all the groovy resources we've mentioned, including ways to connect with our guest, John Chen. If you love this episode, don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review on Audible, iTunes, Good Pods, or your preferred podcast player so you never miss an episode. Our theme music is track 14 by Rev Brock and Solely. I'm your host, Candice Rudardi, reminding you that gratitude is like manure. It's just a pile of poo until you spread it around. Stay groovy, my friends.
Stay groovy.